Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast. This is our first Defender of Caregivers podcast. My name is Lon Kiefer, your host, and I am a caregiver. In fact, I'm known as Doc, the Defender of Caregivers. My expertise is understanding the caregiver personality and helping to develop pro-per. Yes, that's a funny way of saying a familiar word. Pro-per relationships between professional and personal family caregivers, with the goal of eliminating what I call the caregiving flag of fear, loathing, anger, and guilt. It's really all about just getting to understand that we're all trying to do the same thing and that we shouldn't be so harsh on ourselves along the way. Real quick, before we get started on the podcast, upcoming dates. In April, I'll be attending this and speaking at the Virginia Long-Term Care Network and Virginia Assisted Living Association conferences in the first week of April. You can check those out. If you have any questions, you can always find us on Facebook, Defender Caregivers on Facebook. I'm not always that good at putting my calendar there. In fact, I don't even try, but I do respond to direct messages. On April 21st, I'll be at a private professional event in Nashville, Tennessee. And then on May 8th, I'll be doing a professional caregiver event for Mercy Medical Center in Baltimore, Maryland, and doing caregiver-oriented training, caregiver-oriented sales training in conjunction with Health Facilities Association of Maryland on May 10th. And then the fun stuff, May 19th, Sebring, Florida. I'll be doing a personal family caregiver event, the second annual Purple Angels Dementia Awareness Conference for caregivers with my friend Gary Joseph LeBlanc and Lisa Rodriguez in Sebring, Florida. Gary is a longtime friend. We've done a lot of work together. He's a Facebook legend and has been writing articles in Florida for 100 years, has just a phenomenal background. He refers to it as common sense caregiving, and I am not doing him justice to try and talk about him off the cuff. I certainly recommend any family caregivers out there to, and professional caregivers as well. Look for Gary Joseph LeBlanc on Facebook. He'll give you some perspective and insights that would be helpful on either side of that coin. And then we're also waiting on confirmation from United Way to confirm an event that we're trying to coordinate to take advantage of me being down in Sebring, Florida. So stay tuned. And again, you can always find us on Facebook at Defender of Caregivers. Quick advertisements, then we're going to jump into today's topic. Am I a caregiver? On the professional side of things, this podcast is brought to you by Eldermark Senior Housing Software, your all-in-one senior housing software to transform your business. Over the past 20 years, Eldermark has become the leading electronic health record and healthcare technology solution for the senior care industry, and for good reason. They don't offer piecemeal healthcare management solutions. Rather, they partner with senior communities to develop a comprehensive mobile-friendly healthcare software platform that saves time and money while raising the quality of care provided. Learn how Eldermark can help you streamline care, reduce costs, and improve lives. One of the ways that Eldermark improves lives is by working in collaboration with me, Lon Kiefer, the Defender of Caregivers, to provide training and marketing automation services to their clients that are less intrusive, more respectful, and most of all, more effective because they adopt a more nurturing and less nuisancey, yes, that's my word, approach. That's the professional side of things. And on the personal side of things, we are brought to you by SeniorLife.co. You might be a caregiver if you like to help others. According to numerous sources, the most helpful piece of information available when making an important decision is the opinion of others, of your peers, friends, and colleagues. Here, I like to call them caregivers. Senior Life Co. is the newest directory and performance review platform in the senior living industry today. If you really want to help out other caregiver decision makers, visit Senior Life Co. and leave a review of your experiences in the senior living industry. If you're trying to make a decision, visit Senior Life Co. and search the directory. read the reviews, and call the communities directly before making your decisions. Let me talk briefly about a phenomenon here. One of the things that's a fundamental cornerstone of the Defender of Caregivers is that I don't have a desire to influence anyone's decision in any one direction. I just have a desire to help people make caregiver decisions in a rational way. And we're going to dig pretty deep in this throughout the course of this podcast. It's the reason for the podcast, quite frankly. It's I see my "you might be a caregiver if" statements that I've used over the years get repeated by other people. I see some of my blogs get repeated by other people. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's other people that are out there that are creating these things as well. But I see content that I'm creating being used out of context. And the point of it is that I am not here to guide anybody towards a certain objective. I'm here to help people get to wherever they feel they need to be in a in a way that is a little bit more rational, because of all the fog that can be created from the stress and responsibility of being a caregiver. So before I get too deep into it, I want to make a quick comment on using the internet to search for providers and for people that are going to guide you along the way, because the internet is wonderful, but it's also a place that exposes you to people that might not have the best of intentions. And one of the ways around that is to look for third-party reviews, reviews that are left by other people that have had experiences, whether it be, in the home health industry, whether it be, going into a assisted living facility or going to a doctor or a specific hospital or what have you. There's this thing called reviews. And those reviews can be any number of places, whether they be on Google or whether they be at the provider themselves' Facebook website. It doesn't matter. The point is getting feedback from people that have actually experienced services. But before you even get to that point, we all go to Google and we do a search. Well, here's the challenge with that, is that people that are paying for results will crop up, and we find ourselves going down a path of following the paid search engines rather than what's called organic, the ones that are driven by actual people interacting with websites and what have you. So do yourself a favor, whenever you're doing a search, scroll down and find the actual providers of services and contact them directly. When you do a Google search, the results are getting at the top are paid. Let me back up. I'm getting nervous because I'm trying to make an important point here. When you do a Google search, the results you're getting at the top of that search are paid for, not earned by their reputation. If you really want to have a better caregiver experience for anything, even if you're buying a car or if you're, whatever, if you're just trying to buy a microphone like the one I bought in order to plug into my iPhone 6 to do this podcast, if you do a Google search, the first things you're going to get are paid for searches. And that's something is paying to give you an impression. It's not actually genuine. So slide down a little bit further and you will get what the world of activity and opinions delivers for you. And by example, what I mean by that is if you're traveling somewhere in the evening and let's say you went to a wedding and you say to your husband or wife, you say, we can make it home. It's only 8 o'clock. It's only a 2-hour drive. I haven't had anything to drink in over 2 or 3 hours from when the reception began. And then you start driving home and a storm comes in and you're tired and you say, you know what, let's just get a hotel. We were going to do it anyway. And you jump on your phone and you do a Google for a hotel in the town that's coming up, 20 minutes ahead. And what do you end up with? You end up with Travelocity. You end up with Orbitz. This was a very clear, and what you don't end up with is the local hotel. And you may even end up booking a reservation that when you arrive at that late hour isn't there because the systems didn't update. Now, the hoteling industry has done a tremendous amount to try and avoid this. They have this book here, stay here kind of strategy now where they're trying to overcome that. But the healthcare industry has not done that. The providers themselves, whether it be a home health agency, whether a skilled or non-skilled, whether it be a assisted living or what have you, they are not as good at the internet search game as folks that might want to try and turn a profit on helping advise you. So I just want to encourage you that whenever you use the internet for information, that you dig a little bit deeper to communicate with the actual people you're going to work with rather than some of the folks that are trying to, for lack of a better word, steal some of that traffic and influence decisions. So, a couple of principles about Defender of Caregivers philosophy, because you'll find as you listen to me in general and this podcast specifically, I don't talk a lot about specific caregiver issues and scenarios because everybody's walk and everybody's caregiver journey is different. And in some ways, because it's such an emotional thing, it can actually become competitive or comparative at least, where you look at one situation, you compare it to the other, and I'm going to tell you there is no comparison to this, except that I will remind everybody, you know, we want the same thing, whether we're two different personal family caregivers looking at our scenario as it compares to another, or whether we're being compared to a professional caregiver. The point of it is that we all want what's best for both the caregiver and the person that we're caring for. The question is, how do we get there? So I mentioned earlier that the goal is to not influence the direction of a decision, but the way that it is made, and that it be a rational decision rather than an emotional one. And that's a big challenge, and here I'm going to tell you why. So we all have natural and learned tendencies based on genetics and experiences, and together these things express themselves in a personality, and personalities can change and evolve over time based on circumstances. Now, one of these personalities, with the air quotes around it, that is expressed is that of a caregiver, and this is both measurable and predictable. While being neither good nor bad, mind you, these are not pejorative. We're not saying this is good or it is bad. It just that it is. And Myers-Briggs has been around since, even longer than I have, and that's saying something now. But they've been around since the, 50s, 60s, as a measure of personality characteristics and fairly good at being predictive and descriptive in the way folks will make decisions or behave. And one of the caregiver personalities that they have identified and described is the caregiver personality. Now, you couple that with the fact that we all, and if you want to be able to take a Myers-Briggs test, you know, that you can spend tons of money and 6 or 7 hours going through it, or you can do a little quickie online thing, which is maybe take about 10 minutes and give you a pretty good insight. And it's interesting to do them over time so that you can both see how consistent it is and how it evolves. So if you notice that it's starting to change and you do it again, that change starts to lock in. What that means is that you've started to metamorphosize a little bit in how you view and think about things. And this is, I'm not trying to say I'm a psychiatrist or a psychologist here, because I'm clearly not. Doc is the Defender of Caregivers, but I am not a doctor, and I don't play one on TV or on the stage or here on this podcast. But I am giving you some insights to the reading that I've done and the literature that I've reviewed. And so Myers-Briggs identifies a caregiver personality. And then there are other sources that I use, like I'm a big fan of Dr. Burns and his book Feeling Good, where he talks about how we make decisions and how we often think in a distorted fashion. We all think both rationally and irrationally, depending on the circumstances. And when we're stressed, we tend to think irrationally. Now, if you're a caregiver and you have the burdens of managing your own life and those of another person that you love, you have a higher level of stress. There's a lot of statistics behind that, but the leap I'm making is that given that, we sometimes tend to not have the luxury of being able to think rationally. And again, this is neither good nor bad. It just is. Now, one more piece I want to go through before I jump right into today's topic of am I a caregiver, is that you know, I believe and talk about transformation of these beliefs, and I believe that it's a three-phase process of awareness. You know, why are these things happening? Why do we need to even consider evolving on a decision acceptance? How is or will this happen, and how will things change? And then the final piece is allowance. You know, what specifically, spiritually, and intellectually happens next? And who will be there with me as I'm making this change? If you followed the Defender Caregivers approach at all, you will have seen, you know, my bear, Doc the Bear, and Doc's a bear for a reason, because, you know, we can all just kind of giggle and listen to a bear. But if it's a human being, if it's actually me, then we have to develop a relationship, and that gets sticky and complicated. So, man, I'm just rambling here, but hopefully you're sticking with me a little bit. What Doc, the Defender of Caregivers, really is sort of a rational, you know, alter ego calming influence on our decision making and our coping mechanisms, and I guess I really tell that story best in our play, Defending the Caregiver. And I don't want to use this entire podcast to, you know, sort of replace or replicate the play. But the point of it is that through several stories I tell, I and my audience learn that this rational thinking, this sort of voice that we can all learn to develop, it's sort of like a little mini meditational exercise where we can learn to calm ourselves down and make rational rather than emotional decisions. And, you know, as a final reminder, you know, given the stress of being a caregiver, we are more prone to making what Dr. Burns in his book Feeling Good calls distorted decisions. There you have it. I'm glad I kind of got through that. I want to get into our topic. I want to point out that these caregiver distortions are really originally known by Dr. Burns as cognitive distortions, and he lists 10 of them. And today, as we get into our conversation and discussion about am I a caregiver, it's brought to you by distortion number one, all or nothing thinking. You see things in black and white categories. If your performance falls short of perfect, you see yourself as a total failure. Now, and we know that's not true. We're all a blend of you know, perfection and imperfection. And you know, I wrote a blog some time ago that says perfection leads to defection. Is that if we expect perfection of ourselves? You know, as a singer, for example, I'm a horrible singer, but I love to sing, you know, when I'm alone and in the shower or in the car, because I'm horrible at it. And I've learned to almost take joy and laugh at how horrible I am at singing. Whereas if I took the opposite approach and said, gosh, I really have to be good at it, I have to, you know, I have to be perfect, I would never sing. So perfection is an illusion. And the sooner we can, you know, embrace that we won't be perfect, the better off we're going to be. So that's a long introduction to, you know, today's topic, which is am I a caregiver? And I want to tell you a story. You shouldn't be surprised by that because, you know, whether you describe me as a speaker or a comedian or whatever you want to call me, what I really am is a storyteller. And I like the analogies of stories. I like to tell stories that I always say are, you know, on topic, off topic, but on target. In other words, they may not be specifically about something that we're facing, but the parallel is there, and that we're able to draw the parallel. So today, as we're talking about am I a caregiver, by the way, if you do a Google for am I a caregiver, it just blows up, and there are article after article, and I describe a caregiver in probably the broadest term you'll ever want to hear. For me, a caregiver is not a profession. It's not even a present obligation necessarily. It's essentially that whether it be through, you know, duty or desire, that you derive some of your own satisfaction or pleasure, which includes avoidance of pain, by the way, by serving and caring for others. That's a very broad definition, and people would argue with it and be competitive. But again, let's try and, you know, separate ourselves from that and look at this in the broadest terms. Now, the internet will say, here's how they kind of describe caregivers in a couple of different ways. You know, the person who drives an elderly neighbor to his doctor appointment, the daughter who cooks and cleans her parents' home, the nephew that insists his aunt move in with his family so that he can help her with medication to ensure her safety, the spouse that bathes and dresses her partner, the son who lives away from his mom but calls daily and arranges for her care. Now, I know there's some folks that I've interacted with over the years that, you know, these things quite, you know, don't quite make it across the bar of what their burdens and responsibilities are. I mean, I know folks that have been caring for a spouse that's been bed-bound as a quadriplegic with a ventilator breathing assistance for, you know, 10, 15, 20 years. And then there's, the person that kind of has to stop in and check on mom and drop off the groceries. And, you know, how can I use that same term for each of those same people? Well, I can and I do, because I don't think that there's a net sum gain. We're using the term, you know, in one sense, makes it less applicable in another. Bottom line is, this is a empathic relationship where you're caring for another person, and that might serve something internal to you, in that it's your, you know, need or desire to do this for other people. But it is stressful to think of other people first before you think of yourselves, and it's another factor in your decision making. So, in keeping with my style of not hitting a topic straight on, because I try and avoid this comparison stuff, I come at it from a completely different angle. And I want to tell you a story about how I went on a guy's trip a couple of years ago. As a matter of fact, Facebook memory, I love the feature of Facebook memories, because, you know, it reminds you of things that happened in the past. And you might be sitting here saying, oh, I wonder when that was, or when was that? Or you completely forgot something that occurred, and then it shows up in your Facebook memories. Well, as I'm, taping this podcast, it's late March, and we had St. Patrick's Day a week or two ago, and on my Facebook feed was a post reminding me of an event that occurred in my life. Now, here's a lesson for you. When it comes to Facebook or any other kind of thing, you know, I'm not going to tell you, you know, that you always have to stay positive or anything like that. But I am going to tell you that when a Facebook memory comes up, it is a wonderful feeling when it's a positive one. And, you know, I would highly recommend that when you go to do a Facebook post, you try and tell yourself, you know, keep it positive, keep it positive. If you dwell on the negative, that's what your memories are going to be. And I am blessed that most of the negative things in my life kind of blur, and the positive things start to dominate. And one lesson that I would give to the world is to try and avoid the, you know, airing of dirty laundry. And Lord knows I could have used that reminder a couple of times with getting into political conversations here and there. the interesting thing is that, you know, when I'd see what I thought was, an unfair comment on either side of the political arena, I'd chime in from time to time, and then I'd get accused of being on either side of it. So anyway, I try and sometimes fail, as we all do, to stay positive. But Facebook Memories has been wonderful for me in that regard. And on March 17th of 2010, so see, God, it's been 7 years ago, this story that I'm going to tell you, 7 years, that's amazing. But I'm telling you, this trip, it was a ski trip with a bunch of guys. And, you know, if you know anything about my history, you know that I was raised by women, as a woman. when I was a child, one of the things, and I don't know if this was nature versus nurture, but growing up, I had a very eccentric father who, frankly, had a mental illness and did not pursue treatment, which I will share with the world, in a future podcast. Why I'm comfortable saying that, because I don't put any judgment on it. But anyway, I had a wonderful eccentric father that was absent a lot of time. I mean, he was a provider, don't get me wrong, it's not some sad story. But the point is, at a very young age, I learned to take care of my sisters. I had two sisters and my mom. And so it was basically the three of us in the household. So I was outnumbered horribly, and at a very early age, I felt like I had to protect and, we'll use today's word, defend these women in my life. So, and then I went into nursing. Back when men didn't do it, I pursued a career in nursing. So my life, my home life, my professional life, I've been surrounded by women, and I don't always know how to interact socially with men. I played sports. I was a pretty good athlete, don't you know? Could bring it pretty good on a ball field. Was competitive. And, you know, within the lines, as they say, I knew how to interact and compete with other men. But outside of those lines, I'm frequently lost. I don't get it. I don't understand why, when two men should be nurturing, they're competitive sometimes. And I don't want to go too deep down this path. I just want to set the stage for this trip. So I go on this ski trip to Colorado, and I was really honored to be invited on the trip. And it was, I learned from Facebook 7 years ago. And here was the post. March 17th, I endured a no-win situation today. My waitress, Missy, called me a quitter when I started drinking Killian Red in honor of St. Patrick's Day at 11 a.m. rather than continue skiing. Then when my group made me go skiing again after lunch, Missy called me a quitter for leaving the bar. I hope you find that funny. And then so I kind of shared that memory again. Ha ha ha, this guy trip morphed into one of my signature Defender of Caregiver stories I share from the stage, telling me the lifelong lesson about our playing our role in the lives of others, as taught to me by one of my friends on this trip. So here's what happened. We're on this guy trip, and there's, let me count real quick, there is five of us, five swashbuckling men on a one-week-long ski trip in Colorado. Now, two of these guys were my neighbors. One of them was kind of a man crush of mine, that I use that term a lot because of my relationship with my dad. I've always bonded. If you're one day older than me and slightly eccentric and outgoing, I have a man crush on you. I'll follow you around. I'll learn from you. I'm trying to recapture some of that little boy stuff. But so Scott, was the man crush that coordinated this. And then Joe is a neighbor of mine who, we're more like peers, you know. I don't have a man crush on Joe. We're buddies. And these other two guys that were out there Steve was the one that actually coordinated and invited people. I did not know Steve well. He's one of Scott's friends. And then the other gentleman, this is terrible, I can't even remember his name, but he was Russian and had a very heavy Russian accent and was a very accomplished gentleman. He was a pilot, and he had a very sure way about him. And he would make, what do they call it, espresso in the morning instead of coffee. And he traveled with his espresso maker. And he wasn't the first one to introduce me to it, but he was, what's the ham? Prosciutto. He was the one to tell me about, you know, prosciutto ham and the health benefits of it. And I always thought of it as just being fat. But anyway, so we've got this collection of men, and we're supposed to take turns. Like, one is supposed to cook one night, and we ski by day. And all of these guys are better skiers than me. Let's just, you know, put it out there. They're much better skiers than me. And the other piece that is a little bit troublesome to me is that because I just was not holding my own in the skiing, I couldn't keep up with them. I was falling down. I was physically wanting to tap out because I was exhausted and in pain. You know, I was also, by a factor of 5 and in some cases 10 years, the youngest guy on this trip. So that got into my ego as well. Now, again, believe it or not, we're actually talking about, am I a caregiver? And so anyway, the male competition started, and here's how it started. They all knew this, that I hadn't been skiing in years and was a novice skier at best. So when we first landed and got our equipment, the first thing that we did was they took me to Black Diamond Hill, which is the most difficult slope on any at any ski resort. And we go down that, and they are just cracking up at me falling down and getting down it, and I'm cursing. And, you know, so we get down there, and I understand this is sort of a rite of passage and an initiation, but I, you know, in my mind, you know, okay, I survived that. This is, we can get past this childishness stuff, because I viewed it as childish. You know, why do we have to, you know, compete like this? Why can't we just support one another and nurture and care for each other? And it's just not the way it goes. So, I mean, if this was a math competition, it would be like me trying to, you know, compete with Einstein, to try and compete with these guys skiing. And something I know about math is that it's just an accelerated form, you know, of counting and knowing shortcuts and things like that. And and I could do the math real quick. It was me, a solo person, against 4 other guys. So I needed to figure out a way to kind of survive this, because it wasn't going to stop. And it continued on, and, you know, they were calling me certain names because I couldn't keep up. And again, it was all in fun. These are not mean guys. But it started to wear on me a little bit. And what particularly got me upset was, I mean, they were critical of everything. And here's your first parallel to being a caregiver. When you find yourself being the decision maker, the caregiver in your family, we often find ourselves with the other people that are not the primary caregiver being critical of us. And almost the point of nitpicking, and we start to defend their observations. And that's what I started to do. I started to defend myself about everything that they would say to me, and that I would need some kind of a, you know, witty comeback. And in reality, I didn't. I could have just laughed it off or ignored it entirely. But as they were giving me this feedback, I would, you know, look to make some kind of a comment in return. And I remember one time that, you know, I told them, go ahead and ski without me, because I felt like I was holding them back. And they said, no, 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 no. So this is, I don't know, day 2, day 3. I'm skiing down the mountain. And for whatever reason, I was ahead of my Ruski buddy, my Russian friend. Matter of fact, they were calling him Bruce. God, I wish I could remember that guy's name. You know, I could find out and should have, but I don't remember his name. So he stopped and he said, comrade, you're doing well today. And he was being sarcastic. And my accent is terrible, but I said, yeah, just go on. I'll see you down there or whatever. Just, you know, don't wait for me. I don't want to hold you back. He goes, no, I enjoy skiing with you. He goes, you're entertainment. I can rest and watch you. And then he said, this skiing thing, you're not good at it. I can remember this like it was yesterday, but I can't remember his name. So what happened next was actually quite beautiful in an interesting way, is that he coached me a little bit. He gave me advice that I never would have figured out on my own. See, my thighs were killing me when I was trying to get down this hill. And he said, skiing, you're not good at it. He goes, you don't do it right. You are climbing the hill. You go down as if you go up. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, use the boots, not the legs. And he told me that I needed to lean into my ski boots instead of rely on my thighs to keep me in this semi-crouched position. See, I learned really early that I was no good at absorbing the bumps and making the turns that you needed to get down the hill through the moguls and what have you, where you shift your position and you're really flexible and you can kind of sort of... What I learned is that I could kind of tuck. You know, I could just kind of absorb it. You know, just take whatever comes my way. Not on the really bad hills, but on the others, I could just tense up and get in a position and work my way down. But then when I was in a smoother part of the hill that wasn't as steep, that same position didn't work for me because I was too tense and I would fatigue at a point in time where I didn't need to, be exerting that much energy, but I would do it nonetheless. And he said, use the boots, not the legs. He goes, enjoy the ride down the hill instead of working to climb the hill. And I'll be darned if this guy that had been picking on me throughout and has been kind of macho didn't give me the greatest piece of advice, well, the second greatest piece of advice that I got on that trip. And it was basically to use the resources that were available to me and to rest when I could rest and work when I had to work and to, you know, be kind of aware that there was another way of doing things. So that's another parallel for you. And mind you, I just want to keep reminding you, I am not trying to influence anybody to do any one thing or end up in any one direction, just to be aware that there are other ways and that there are perhaps better ways, even if it's just in the way you view your unchanged journey. You don't need to change where you're going or even how you're doing it. I just want to invite you to a more relaxed way to view what you're doing. Less critical, less stressed, to use the boots rather than your legs. So that was a great lesson, and but the picking on continued, the nitpicking, the judging, it was merciless. And so day three or day four, I don't know what it was, I quit. I went to the bar and I started drinking. It was St. Patrick's Day, and I remember they had numerous different Irish whiskey drinks. I think there were like five of them. And I said to the bartender again, and I don't remember until I saw this Facebook post that her name was Missy. I said, I drank a Killian Red before I saw the because that's my like a traditional St. Patrick's Day drink for me, before I saw the placard there that had all the other Irish whiskey drinks. And when she came up to me and said, you want another round? I said, nope, I'm switching it up. See that board over there with the specials? She goes, yeah, which one do you want? I said, all of them. I said, these guys are going to ski all day, and they're going to give me all kinds of grief when they're done. So I want to be too drunk to care, and I've got plenty of time. So just you pick the order, but bring them to me. So that was what I was committed to doing that afternoon. And I mean, this day stunk. I was finding myself doing things I wouldn't normally do because they were picking on me so much. Like, for example, I lost my gloves. in all the hustle and bustle, I lost one of my gloves, and it was freezing. And then later in the day, so I was skiing with one glove, and the other hand I was trying to protect as much as I could. And, you know, I actually, the way I got out of skiing was I told him I was going to go in and buy some gloves, and then I figured I'd duck into the bar and never tell him I wasn't coming back. And later in the day, I don't know that I'm going to tell you the story about how I ended up with a better set of gloves, but anyway, that's how I got out of it. I didn't even want to confront it, but they had been picking on me unmercifully. And that morning when they picked on me, I put in the address of the resort in the GPS, and the GPS got us lost. And they even gave me grief about that. I mean, I put in the address correctly, but the GPS hadn't been updated, or I don't even remember what happened, but they're giving me crap about that. And I'm like, oh man. So when we were getting ready to ski that day, this is only day three, Scott came up to me. He goes, Lon, because I've known Scott for, you know, like 10 or 12 years now, but he can't say my name properly today, and he couldn't then either. He goes, Lon, what's the matter, man? I notice you're getting down. You're upset a little bit. I said, Scott, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Just go on your way. You know, because I'm sitting there still trying to put on my boots. They've already got theirs on and are walking away. And so Scott sits down next to me on the bumper of this, you know, Jeep that while I'm putting on my boots, and he reaches in and he pulls out a flask of brandy and he hands it to me. Yeah, it's like 8 a.m, but you know, guys on a ski trip. And he goes, here, take some of this. Let me talk to you for a minute. He goes, look, I don't want you getting upset. I know you feel like people are picking on you, but I need you to know something. Every team has a beatdown guy. You're ours. That's exactly the way he said it to me. And I remember thinking, ah, I'm the beatdown guy. Okay. I know my title. I'm the beatdown guy. And it actually made me feel better for a little while, just a little while, until later they kept picking on me. I'm thinking, I'm the beatdown guy. You know, why don't I feel better anymore? Well, it's because Scott told me my title. He told me my title. He didn't tell me my role. Later on during the trip, when he saw, he said, Lon, what's the matter? What are you upset about? I said, well, Scott, when you told me I was a beatdown guy, it made me feel good for a little while. But you know what? The beatings kept on coming. And just because I knew my title didn't make it any easier. He goes, Lon, didn't I teach you anything? You're focusing on your title. I told you your title, but you're not focusing on your role. See, Lon, there's a big difference between a title and a role. And let me explain it to you. So you're the beatdown guy. That's your title. But your role is much more important than that. You're the one that keeps everybody together, keeps everybody on the same page, keeps everybody from fighting amongst each other. And you're the one that takes it from everybody. And what you got to understand about your role is that you're the most important person on the team, because you keep us together on this trip and you keep all the competition to a minimum, because everybody's picking on you because you're the beatdown guy. And you're taking it because you know you're the beatdown guy. What you're not realizing is the value of that role. See, as the beatdown guy, you have the right at any minute that you choose to do it to reach out to any one of these guys and just read them the riot act. Jump all over them with both feet, stomp on them, be rude, be nasty, be mean, be whatever, put them in their place. And you know what? They have to take it from you, because you're the beatdown guy and they know they've been giving it to you all week. And they gotta man up and take it every now and then if you decide to turn around and dole it out to them. So that's the title, the beatdown guy. But the role is that you're here to keep the team together, to keep the competition at a minimum, and to keep us moving forward, to having a good time, getting down the hill, and enjoying this week together. That's your role, Lon. And you know what? From that moment on, I really started to enjoy the trip. I didn't feel like I had to make excuses or come back with any kind of a witty defensive retort to any of the chiding that was going on. I knew that I could sort of laugh it off, or I could shrug it off, or I could get mean and give it back. as long as I stepped back into the role of the beatdown guy and did what the group needed, I had a lot more freedom and a lot more rights than I ever realized that I did. And I enjoyed the rest of the trip so much more than I would have if I hadn't been told by Scott at 8 in the morning drinking brandy, sitting on a bumper of a car at the base mountain at a ski resort in Denver, Colorado, that my title was the beatdown guy and that my role was keeping the team together in a cohesive way. And part of my role was to not get upset by the feedback that they gave me, because I did have the privilege, if you want to call it, of being the beatdown guy. And so the parallel that I want to draw is that Family Caregiver Alliance has a lot of statistics, and I don't want to just talk about answering the question of, am I a caregiver or not? I also want to talk about and take this story and pull it back into the awareness of distorted thinking, all or nothing thinking. You see things in black and white categories. If your performance falls short of perfect, or if other people imply that your performance falls short of perfect, you see yourself as a total failure. That is just absolutely not the case. And the parallel that I want to draw here is that Family Caregiver Alliance gives us a ton of statistics, and they talk about role identification, and they talk about caregivers. This is a piece that I really like making, and in future podcasts, I won't have to tell a 20-minute story to get to the point. That is, if you listen to the podcast and you start listening to them, and I hope you will share these with other people, and I hope you'll take this as an invitation to, you know, learn about your caregiver perspective without having to wallow in more caregiver stuff. I mean, none of us want the thing that we're trying to endure to be 24/7 the thing that we're concentrating on. And I want these podcasts to be an opportunity to get some insight without having to really do caregiver stuff, so to speak. But Family Caregiver Alliance talks about this role versus title issue. And so many family caregivers that are going through this aspect, and you professional caregivers out there, I want you to hear the nuances of this as well. And I want you to take this perspective and keep it in mind when you are communicating, supporting, selling to, serving, whatever you want to call it, family caregivers, because you're not there to get your agenda done. You are there to facilitate the personal family caregiver getting through this journey without the flags: fear, loathing, anger, or guilt. So Family Caregiver Alliance, again, talks about this role versus identity. And so many families say to themselves, family members say to themselves, oh, I'm not a caregiver. I'm a spouse. I'm a husband. I'm a wife. I'm a son or a daughter, or in the case of early onset dementia or some kind of a congenital, you know, issue, maybe a parent. And of course you are that first and foremost, or in the case of, you know, marriage, legally till death do you part. But the reality is that's what you are, first and foremost, but that is not the way you're having to behave or to lead your life. There's a shift. You know, you are first and foremost a spouse or a family member, but in your behavior, you might be primarily a caregiver. And there is a shift, because, see, if you constantly say to yourself, I don't want to get into should statements, which is another one of the caregiver distortions, but if you say to yourself, I should do this or I should do that because I'm a spouse or a parent or a child of the person that I'm caring for, you don't allow yourself assistance because you think you're the only one that can fulfill that role. And that's where you're getting title and role confused. If you continue to have title and role confused, you won't allow other people into your journey. So awareness, acceptance, and allowance. You know, be aware that this can happen to you. Be aware of the why that you're there, you know, to provide this necessary assistance to improve the quality of life of a loved one. It doesn't mean that you are the only one that can do it. And accept that if you view yourself as a spouse and not as a caregiver, exclusively as a spouse, it's going to be harder and harder to allow others to join you on your journey. And if you accept that all or nothing thinking is a distortion and it's a real thing, and that you don't have to expect perfection, and you can allow yourself, see how these words start to morph, and that you can allow yourself the occasional slip up or the occasional, hey, I did my best kind of thinking. And if you can stay rooted in your role rather than just your title, the just reward you get is twofold in this regard. As the beatdown guy, you're allowed to go to all the other people that are being critical of you and basically say, look, I'm not taking your crap. I'm doing my best here. And you need to recognize what I'm doing, and you either need to help me to fix it, or you need to just shut up and accept. I don't like how harsh that sounded, but you get the point that I'm making. So that is one of the benefits of the whole role issue. The other one is that if you can start to identify that the way you're behaving is more as a caregiver than as a spouse, you can separate that duty or task or whatever it may be and move it from the spousal responsibilities, and therefore allow someone else to do that because they are doing a caregiver role, which frees you up to do a spousal role. One of the things that spouses need to do for one another, or family members need to do for one another, is take care of themselves so that they're viable and that they're around longer and that the relationship continues. And focusing too much on another is actually hurtful to yourself and in some ways disloyal to them. I'm not going to take the time to go too far into that, but that's a theme you'll hear me come back to from time to time. And I hope this analogy, this parallel of these stories, is ringing true to you, because in the world of Family Caregiver Alliance, they talk about this a little bit. And here's what they say about when people fully identify in the role of caregiver, is when they themselves, and we want to get there before this, when the caregiver themselves begins to suffer from their health as a result of the role that they're playing, and a doctor points out to them the stress and the connecting of the dots, that's when they start to realize, oh man, I'm not just being a family member or a spouse, I'm being a caregiver. So one of them is when they themselves start to suffer and decline in their health. But a couple other triggers that help this awareness are when you actually, the relationship shifts to a point where you're actually having to do what's called an ADL, an activity of daily living. What I'm giving you now is actual hardcore, literature and science from Family Caregiver Alliance. When you're actually feeding or helping bathe someone that never used to require that assistance of you, that's when it starts to sink in that, oh, my relationship is changing. And this may seem not subtle and obvious to you, but it's really very epic to have this awareness of this change, because then you can start to accept that the way things have been can't be the way they will always be. You're going to have to accept some changes in your relationship and in how you are, caring for your loved one. And then in my eyes, and in the eyes of Family Caregiver Alliance and the research, you're much more likely, I think they said 9 times more likely, to allow others to help you, because you no longer view the role as just being a spousal role. It's a caregiver role. And I think the just rewards for that is that you then can behave like what you thought you were, the spouse. Like you can take time to, I don't want to be a, you know, sexist here and say too feminine an example, but you can take the time to do a makeover or just spend extra time, you know, gussying yourself up or whatever it is that you like to do. And this is where I get myself in trouble because I'm not giving you the best of example of what you can do to celebrate the you in this equation. But what I would like you to do is I'd like you to share this podcast. I'd like you to give me feedback on Facebook at Defender of Caregivers. I'd like you to, I'm trying to play with Twitter. Doc Defender is what I am at Twitter. I don't do much of that. I'm trying to learn. But I believe in the value of this message. I believe in you. And when you talk about a value, not only do I want you to understand your role, I want you to understand the value of what you do. Nobody looks at what they do as a monetary thing. But don't kid yourself. What family caregivers provide, if it was a value, as the way the industry, the senior living industry or the home health industry values it, it's about $450 billion in care that is being provided. That's more than three times, and you can argue with these numbers a little bit, but that's more than three times the dollars that are actually spent in the industry itself. So if you need to look at it from a, you know, monetary sense rather than a emotional sense or a loving sense, there you have it. What you're doing for your loved ones is far more valuable than you probably would ever realize. And see, value is an interesting proposition. When I introduce myself as my name is Lon Kiefer and I am a caregiver to audiences, they don't react. It's like, yeah, so what? You know, like it doesn't have any value. And then I call them out on it and I make them realize it. And then I get usually a big round of applause. And it's a wonderful icebreaker to let people know that, hey, I'm a little bit unconventional. You know, this is humor based, but it's a serious topic. And that's what I want to try and deliver and share with you in these Defender of Caregiver podcasts going forward. I will talk to you more and more about caregiver distortions. I will talk to you more and more about caregiver personality, and we'll bring up, you know, things like nature versus nurture. And I just always want to leave you with a perspective to where you can understand your role and the value of what you, your role, you know, your role. Sounds kind of funny. I didn't know I say it that way until I'm forcing myself to listen, knowing that this is being recorded. But anyway, this is we're drawing near the end of the first Defender of Caregivers podcast. In future podcasts, we're going to bring in some guests that'll be both professional speakers and caregivers, as well as some personal family caregivers along the way to share their perspective. And you're going to hear more and more about Defending the Caregivers, Defending the Caregiver, my play, which I like to do at churches or theaters as a fundraiser. So if you know anybody that has a worthy cause to help them, the first one we did was Lifting David. You can go to Facebook and look around for that, or go to GoFundMe and put in Lifting David, and you'll see that story. Very life and mission changing story for me with Defender of Caregivers. So I'm about to wrap this up again, and I just want to thank you for being on this journey with me and for allowing me to advocate for you, whether you know it or not. And in closing, I want to share with you what I refer to as the caregiver's vow. It is it takes about 20 or 30 seconds to say. It's easy to memorize. If you want it in print copy, just reach out to me. I'll be glad to send it to you. But I use this as a little meditation every now and then. And on YouTube, you might find the caregiver's vow, which is, I think I did 26 of them. I did them every weekend for about 6 months. The caregiver's vow, which is like a 2-minute video of, caregiver issues. And here we go. Here's the caregiver's vow. I am proud of who and what I am. I am a caregiver. I live in awareness that I take satisfaction in pleasing others and sometimes overcommit. I accept that some things I cannot change and that I am not perfect. I will allow others to help and join me on my caregiver's journey. I will honor myself as I care for others. This is my solemn caregiver's vow. Okay, everybody, that's it for our first podcast. I feel like I got into a little bit of a rhythm about halfway through there. I hope to be able to relax and do that a little bit more quickly in future podcasts. But I want to promise you this, it's going to be genuine. It's going to be real, and it's not going to be scripted. And if it has to be scripted, then I really don't want to do it. I want this to be something that we can relax and celebrate the imperfection of this and all the things we do because of the best intents of what it is that we do. And I want to just elevate the role we have in each other's lives. And, you know, hit us up on Facebook at Defender of Caregivers. Find us on Twitter at Doc Defender. And if someone could help me understand why and help me out, we'll look into Instagram for the adorable pictures of Chance and the Docmobile. I'll tell you about Chance, the dog that I just recently adopted for therapy. So, gotta run. Love y'all. See you next time. Goodbye. And most of all, thank you for caring.